Arlington. You're listening to Practical Security on Arlington Independent Media's Radio Arlington. My name is Beverly Allen, and I will be your host for the next 30 minutes. We're live streaming on WERA.FM. You can listen to podcasts on WERA.FM/demand and on practicalsecurityradio.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at Practical Secure. Today, we're talking about a recently released report that highlights the increase in ransomware incidents impacting critical infrastructure organizations in 2021. The title of the report is 2021 Trends Show Increased Globalized Threat of Ransomware. Joining me in that discussion today is William J. Ryan from the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency within the Department of Homeland Security, or DHS CISA for short. Bill Ryan is the Regional Director of DHS's Region 3. Bill, welcome to Practical Security.
Thanks, Beverly. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So let's get started by having you please remind our listeners about the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency and its mission.
Sure. Thanks, Beverly. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, basically we're the nation's risk advisors, assisting our partners, local, state, federal governments, private sector, as well as territories and tribes, protecting their critical infrastructure in the cyber world, in the physical security world, communications world, and of course, where all that converges.
So that's a big mission.
It is.
Big mission. Now, tell us about your role as regional director for Region 3.
Sure. CISA has our headquarters, obviously, and 10 regions around the country. We break the country down into geographic regions. So for Region 3, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, West Virginia, and of course, Washington, D.C. in the fieldwork area falls under Region 3, and we're headquartered out of Philadelphia. So we have a regional office there, and we have personnel that report to that office and have certain functions. But then we have dispersed field personnel that actually live where they work. So we have advisors that are all over that area I just described to you, working with stakeholders, partners, in advising, in assessing, in exercising, in training to help them better protect themselves. And that same model is mirrored in the other 9 regions as well. As a regional director, I oversee that operation in the region and make sure we're being as effective and as efficient as possible.
That's a great mission, especially today.
It is.
Now, when you talk about partners, are you talking about government partners or are there businesses involved as well?
It's everybody. Yes, okay. It's government at every level, local, state, federal, tribal, territorial, and it's private sector. Yes, we have a lot of interaction with the private sector. A lot of what the private sector does enables our critical infrastructure and our national critical functions that we all depend on, that we live on. So we do work heavily with the private sector as well.
Thank you for that, Bill. Mm-hmm. I'm going to switch gears a bit back to the report. Now, this report is a result of CISA in coordination with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the National Security Agency, the Australian Cybersecurity Center, and the UK's National Cybersecurity Center. And so this is a joint effort released as a joint cybersecurity advisory. How unusual is this type of collaboration?
It's not unusual at all, actually. It happens quite often these days. As you can see, domestically and internationally, we're all dealing, a lot of us are dealing with the same threats, whether they're cyber or physical oriented. So to join up and to put our best practices together, our knowledge together, and get it out to a wider audience so people can learn both domestically and internationally how to better protect themselves, that helps all of us. So yeah, it has definitely been something we've strived to do, and it's not uncommon at all anymore.
You know, I think our listeners are going to be very encouraged by that because, you know, we see all the headlines and really there are no borders, are there? There are no borders in cybersecurity.
There aren't. Now, there are no borders in cybersecurity, and a lot of, even in the physical space, a lot of what we see overseas, we can take lessons from here domestically. But especially with cybersecurity, there are no borders. You are correct.
I know I'm reassured to know that there's this level of collaboration and coordination. Now, the technical details of that report are based on behaviors and trends among cyber criminals. And these are what's described in the report and the advisory are the behaviors that were observed just in 2021 by these various cybersecurity authorities in the countries we talked about. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? These are alarming trends.
They are. Yeah. I mean, the advisory lays out, as you pointed out, cyber actors, how they operate, some of their tactics and their techniques, some of the things you could look out for to help prevent you from becoming a target. I say you, individuals, obviously become targets of ransomware just as well as corporations do. And then individuals within corporations oftentimes enable that ransomware attack by their actions as well. So yes, there are definitely some alarming trends. In that advisory also, we have not only the indicators, the tactics and techniques, but we have protective measures, right? And the protective measures are really important for people to understand and to take action on. Some of them are what people hear in everyday language but don't really put together, and just the reminder of those things are so important. But the trends going from larger corporations to smaller and mid-sized and small corporations, businesses, phishing attacks have been on the rise. And, you know, it's easy to be fooled by phishing attacks. You know, you really have to pay attention to what's coming in. Mm-hmm. You know, those emails that look legitimate, that are phishing, quote unquote, for your credentials, mm-hmm. right, your passwords and your account numbers, or that have a link in there to click on. And that's been on the rise. And training within organizations mm-hmm. for their employees is big with that. I know that happens across government as well, that training.
Yes.
Just to recognize, hey, this is a little off. So before I click on that link, let me report it. Let me not do anything with this and report it. So yeah, some of the trends are definitely disturbing, including how these cyber criminals are extorting money, right? And the threats that they're making to get their ransom mm-hmm. paid. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the report actually talks about, and you just reiterated how sophisticated these attacks are now. Before, our advice used to be look for grammatical errors, misspellings, and so forth. But that's not necessarily the case anymore, is it?
No, it's not. An email can look absolutely legitimate. I've gotten a couple actually myself. And literally, if I looked at the email address after the fact, it's a one letter off from the email address. Mm-hmm. But everything else looked perfectly normal and legitimate. No misspellings, you know, nothing like that in the text. So you really have to pay attention. And sometimes if you really take a second to read what's being asked of you mm-hmm. and think about the common sense approach, like, oh, wait a minute, would that person really ask me for that? Mm-hmm. And just step back for a second. And if you verify that, then great. You verify it via other means, a phone call, whatever, fine. But those things that are asking you for that personal information, you really mm-hmm. do need to take a step back.
So we have to be as sophisticated, quote unquote,
right.
as the attackers are, these threat actors.
Yep.
DHS and other authorities recommend against paying a ransom.
Yeah, we do discourage that.
Okay.
And that's for multiple reasons. Number one, it encourages the threat actors to target other facilities and individuals because they see that their efforts are having mm-hmm. some success. The other reason, there is no guarantee. Remember, these are cyber criminals, right? Mm-hmm. So there's no guarantee that once you pay their ransom, they're going to release your data back to you mm-hmm. or whatever it is they did to hold your ransom, remediate that situation. It also lets them know that you as an individual or you as a corporation, company, government office, whatever, it also lets them know that when they come back to you, they're most likely to be successful again mm-hmm. in getting a ransom paid.
It's tricky, you know, I imagine for
Very
businesses,
much.
Particularly if you're a hospital. The hospitals have been hit a lot lately.
Yes.
You know, what do you do if you've got patient data and...
Yeah, it's hard. It's a hard thing to deal with. And that's why all the planning up front is so important, mm-hmm. right? You mentioned data. Having offline backup data mm-hmm. to go to if your data is tied up
okay.
Is a best practice. And then you can avoid you know, having your data that you can't get access to tied up. Mm-hmm. But on the, in that advisory and on the CISA.gov webpage, mm-hmm. and the StopRansomware.gov webpage, mm-hmm. there are all kinds of best practices, protective measures, indicators of compromise. All of that's laid out there for someone to go to and just kind of read through and say, okay, oh, I didn't think of doing that. Yeah, let me try that. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, here's a checklist, and maybe you just missed the one. Right? Yes. And then you can hit that one, and maybe that's the one that hardens your system enough to keep that cyber criminal out.
Wonderful. So not only is CISA providing information about what the trends are, CISA is also providing resources, particularly for those businesses that are not cyber savvy. They don't necessarily have the people or the other resources to even begin to understand what's necessary.
Yes, that's okay. You're right. That's true. And that's important, right? There are some businesses, as you said, that are cyber savvy and some that may not be. Mm-hmm. So those resources are available on those sites I described, CISA.gov and StopRansomware.gov. Okay. And on CISA.gov, there's a Shields Up campaign we have going on right now, okay. which outlines, you know, those protective measures to help shield you from cyber criminals, whether cyber criminals or state actors or whomever they mm-hmm. are. The other thing I want to mention is we do have, I mentioned that dispersed field force that's out there. Mm-hmm. In that field force, we have protective security advisors, which focus more on physical security and the physical cyber convergence. We have emergency communications coordinators. We have chemical security inspectors. But the one I'll mention last is the cybersecurity advisor.
Okay.
So we have cybersecurity advisors in geographic areas around this region and around the country. And they can come out and sit with a business and ask them what their concerns are, kind of get to a point where they say, okay, some of the resources, tools that we have at CISA, here's where I think we could go to get the tools that you need for your specific situation, right? They can do an assessment for a business. They can help a business get an exercise together and participate in it.
Okay.
They can bring training to that business and just give them overall advice and options for consideration to reduce the risk,
okay.
and strengthen their security posture. Mm-hmm.
For those of you just joining us, my guest today is William Ryan from the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency within the Department of Homeland Security. That's wonderful. So you talk about exercises. I imagine those are tabletop, what we would call tabletop
Correct.
Exercises.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And is there a cost to the businesses?
No okay. cost to the businesses. It's our mission, and our employees are out there to provide that service. So again, and I mentioned cybersecurity advisors, but if somebody has concerns in the physical arena, physical mm-hmm. security, mm-hmm. have that same service, and our emergency communications coordinators as well. Our chemical security inspectors, they are more looking at chemical facilities that store certain amounts of chemicals or certain types of chemicals.
Okay.
But the rest of the protective security advisors, cybersecurity advisors, are just out there to advise on whatever the issue is
okay.
that a business or, yeah, I say individual within a business or a business has.
That's wonderful. You know, I am so glad to have you here this morning.
That's
because
my pleasure. Yeah.
Typically, even for me as a cybersecurity professional, we're bombarded by news all the time about what's wrong and what's happening, but we don't necessarily hear where to go for help.
Yeah.
Right?
No, that's a good point. Very good point.
So,
yes. And there's also confusion on, well, do I go to this person, this agency, or that agency mm-hmm. for. And I can tell you that the partnership is really strong with CISA, FBI, the Secret Service, mm-hmm. NSA. You can name the agencies. We all have our part to play.
Okay.
So going to one pretty much hits all.
Okay.
Right? And out here in the field where I said we have our dispersed employees, we're partnered up with those agencies I just mentioned.
Okay.
And their field personnel.
Ah.
So we work a lot of things together.
Wonderful.
Yes.
So there's a broad network.
Exactly.
Then.
Yeah.
Kind of like a spider's web, right?
Yes. That's right. That's right. And we can pull in anybody that we need to add to that, you know, to that group
okay.
as needed. If something comes up that is a little out of the norm,
okay.
hey, we need that expertise, let's give
okay.
that person a call. We try to do it as one unit as opposed to, you know, separate government entities.
Very good. So did you notice my Spider-Man reference there?
I like that. Yeah, you're a Spider-Man fan?
I am.
As am I. So I like it. Very nice.
Now, let's talk some more about the physical security. Mm-hmm. When folks hear that, talk a little bit about that, because they don't necessarily also equate physical security with cyber as a part of cybersecurity.
Sure. Yeah, I'll talk about physical security on its own and then kind of mesh the two.
Okay.
So physical security, you can go anywhere from, you know, the guards, the gates, the entryways, your protection on your windows, doors, your badging, mm-hmm. how do you get people in and out, your CCTV, mm-hmm. your fences. Do okay. you have, you know, how high are they? Barbed wire on it. But it's all meant to protect something inside. Mm-hmm. So you have two ways to kind of put the two together. You have a cyber incident could cause a physical incident, like what we noticed on Colonial Pipeline, for instance.
Yes.
We've had threat actors get into maybe a plant mm-hmm. where they could adjust the type of material, whether it be a chemical mm-hmm. or other material introduced into a certain process,
okay.
and control that and mm-hmm. overdo it, you know, to cause harm.
Right.
We also have physical security protecting our cybersecurity assets and backbones, right,
okay.
in these physical buildings.
Right.
So the convergence of physical and cyber has always been there, but we've been talking about it even more recent years because we see the impact that a cyber event can have in the physical security world.
Absolutely.
And that's also why oftentimes if we see a facility or a company asking us for assistance mm-hmm. and they have a very heavy cyber and physical nexus to them, mm-hmm. cybersecurity and physical security nexus, we'll send a protective security advisor and cybersecurity advisor together.
Okay.
So they can make sure they catch the convergence where it exists and make sure that they produce a report.
Yes.
To let them know where the vulnerabilities exist and what options they have to try to reduce the vulnerability and reduce the risk.
You know, we've, in the past, I'd say before Colonial Pipeline, folks were just individuals mm-hmm. were looking at cybersecurity in the abstract. I know questions I would get asked, why would anyone be interested in my data?
You know? Right, right.
And, you know, I don't have anything to worry about because I'm not Target, you know, I'm not, mm-hmm. you know, Facebook, you name it. But it's only when we were impacted by the gas lines, you know, and price hike for a short period,
yes.
that it really began to hit home.
That's
for
right.
folks.
Yep.
So this is a fitting discussion. And what I'm also hearing now are concerns about the food supply, the water supply, those sorts of things. Can you share with listeners what are some of the critical infrastructures? Because beyond now, the pipelines, mm-hmm. many people are still asking that question.
Sure. Critical infrastructure can take on different meanings based on, mm-hmm. you know, where you're asking and who's looking at mm-hmm. it. To answer it basically, from our perspective, from CISA's and many of our partners' perspective, think of lifeline infrastructure to start, mm-hmm. right? Energy, power. Let's just focus on power. Nothing mm-hmm. works without power.
Right.
So that's what we consider that a lifeline infrastructure, mm-hmm. right? Healthcare, telecommunications, transportation, water, wastewater. They're all the things that we depend on and we have to have for our everyday life, which is why we call them lifeline infrastructures, right?
Okay.
They enable our way of life.
Okay.
We have a whole host of national critical functions that we at CISA have put together, our National Risk Management Center has put together, to talk about those functions that we all depend on mm-hmm. as a country. And then you can, from there, say, okay, which facilities, which companies, which governments, agencies, government facilities enable those national critical functions.
Okay.
Right? And then they become the critical assets. Mm-hmm. But if you really want to get down to it from a basic level, those lifeline infrastructures mm-hmm. are very critical. And then you have other sectors, commercial facility sectors, high rises, sports mm-hmm. complexes.
Wow.
You know, and when transportation, we just don't mean rail, we mm-hmm. mean bridges, mm-hmm. you know, that connect pieces of our country.
Okay.
Ports are in transportation mm-hmm. as well. So within certain sectors, it breaks down in even further. Financial institutions are another piece
yes.
of critical infrastructure. So there's 16 sectors. If you remember nothing else, the lifeline mm-hmm. infrastructures enable all of that other.
Okay. You know. I think you really got the attention of the young folks listening when you mentioned phone and telecommunications,
oh, yeah.
right?
Yeah, right. Right. iPhones gone and
right.
all of a sudden, wait a minute, what am I doing? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they don't exist, apparently, unless they're on social media, right?
Yeah, that would all be affected, right? Right.
Well, you know, to be fair, we're generalizing. We know that not all young folks,
of course,
you know, go crazy.
No. I think we all, no, but we all depend on our phones.
We
right?
do. We do.
There was a time when we didn't have this capability. And yes. if you think back to that or you're put into that position again, mm-hmm. and you think, how would I survive without
yes.
the constant communication? I mean, you could, obviously, yes. you would. We all adapt. Mm-hmm. But you can't imagine it because information is coming so quickly and people like
Absolutely.
To share their lives with others so quickly
right.
and get immediate feedback. And we're all in that world.
Yes.
Young and old. But if you really think about the impact that would have, if you mm-hmm. really try to imagine that, yeah, we would all survive and adapt, but it would be difficult.
It'd be difficult.
Yeah.
I recall the days when I learned to read a map at a young age. My dad taught me to read a map. And so going on any trip, mm-hmm. it would be map this out.
Yep.
Now I live by my GPS.
Yeah.
And I don't know what I would do, really, if I, you know, it's the first thing I do. I plug in my destination and I head off.
It's funny you mentioned that because I used to take pride in the fact I could read a map really well when I was younger before all the GPS.
Yes.
And I know where I'm going. I could do this. And now, like, same thing. I was in the car the other day driving and I was talking to somebody and I had to keep looking down. Oh wait, it's making me make a left or I'm going to wind up on the highway. So I'm in the same boat.
Yeah. So, those are really important considerations.
Yes.
And so that requires an amount of vigilance and engagement from the public as well.
That's right.
Right?
Yes.
Because some of these critical infrastructure resources that you talk about are remote.
They are. And so we are a partnership organization, mm-hmm. right? We go out and we form our relationships, partnerships. We're voluntary. We're not regulatory, other than the chemical part I mentioned. So the relationships, what we have to offer, the trust we build with our partners in the private sector and public sector mm-hmm. is what really makes all of this work.
Okay.
And again, we don't do anything in a vacuum. We're out there with our federal government partners doing it as well. But it does take all of us to collaborate, coordinate. I mean, look, we learn from our private sector partners mm-hmm. all the time. And vice versa. So yes, it does take individuals, corporations, companies all collaborating together with government to make this work.
On previous broadcasts, we've talked about organizations like CI Security, the MSISACs, the various information mm-hmm. sharing and analysis centers. Can you remind our listeners what those are and why it's important? Even, I would imagine, some of our local and state government folks mm-hmm. may not necessarily realize that there is help and collaboration in those areas.
Sure. Information Sharing Analysis Center, enabled by DHS mm-hmm. and CISA, but really a conglomeration of a bunch of different organizations mm-hmm. that make sure that information is shared across their stakeholder mm-hmm. landscape. And there are formal, as you said, information sharing and analysis centers. And then when we have our personnel that are out there living where they work, as I mentioned before, there are localized versions of that mm-hmm. going on everywhere.
Okay.
So local state governments and private sector entities have public-private partnership groups that meet regularly and share information with each other. And that's another big part of getting involved with the regions mm-hmm. From CISA. We can plug those businesses and corporations into those groups.
Okay.
So they go to those regular meetings. They make contacts, have relationships with people mm-hmm. that may be in like industries or different. So they can reach out to them one-on-one, as well as get the alerts and advisories to come out from those groups. Mean more to the locals there
yes.
than something else.
It's great you mentioned alerts because there are, I'm sure people listening are thinking, well, gee, this is a lot. CISA is doing a lot. There are 10 regions. There are multiple states in the various regions. Where do we plug in for this information? So talk about the alerts and how people can sign up for those alerts, because even individuals can sign up. It's not necessarily organizations.
They can.
Okay.
Yes. There are alerts that you can sign up for through government agencies mm-hmm. Individually, and the links to those alerts and how to sign up are always on their websites.
Okay.
But in addition, I'll point to websites as I did before, CISA.gov and others, but I don't want to take the personal contact away. the reason we have people living in the areas where they work is for that personal touch and personal contact.
Okay.
So, for instance, Region 3, based out of Philadelphia, we have an email address, cisaregion3, CISAREGION, the number 3, at hq.dhs.gov. If someone were to not know where to go to sign up for an advisory, join a group, get information, ask for an assessment, whatever, they can send an email to that email box. Now, that covers the areas I said in Region 3.
Okay.
And every region has the same, just change the number. And we can then get in touch with them personally and say, okay, what are you really interested in? And steer them in the right direction.
So that personalized touch is really incredible.
Yes.
I guess operating here in the Washington metro area, we've been accused of thinking there's nothing else outside the Beltway. It's just us.
That's right. I've worked here many years, so I understand.
It's nice for the folks listening to be able to get that sort of information.